Then interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office. This is tape 60A, side 2. Go ahead.
Okay. Another one of those things that people think has always been there. That is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court he's in charge of the entire court system of the state of Oregon, what we call court reform. And the whole idea, of course, was to speed the process, speed the whole thing up, and it's worked wonderfully well. That began during my administration. It was our initiative, and it passed, became part of Oregon law, and it's working extremely well.
Now, before that, was the Chief Justice, did he have anything to do with
it? No, no.
Did he have anything to do with the court administration?
Not all, well, the court administration for the Supreme Court.
But not for all the courts.
This now is with the court reform, as we call it, has something to do with the administration of all courts, district, circuit, appeals, and, of course, Supreme Court. Now, obviously, he has someone in his office. He doesn't do it all by himself. But the point is, he's the one responsible for administration of all the courts in Oregon. Now, again, people think that's been here forever. It hasn't. It started with my administration. I appointed the first woman chief of staff in the history of the state of Oregon, Jerry Thompson, wonderful person. I appointed the first woman Supreme Court judge in the history of the state of Oregon. And I'm very proud of that, of both of those things. And not so much, and among the reasons, you know, it's interesting, I didn't make a big to-do about it. These are good people. Qualified people. I mean, I'm not talking male, female, they were people. And where somewhat, if they were doing it for political effect, it'd make sure that the whole world knew about it. And so maybe that's why I'm bringing it up, because I didn't. But the fact is, they were the first. And it's just because they were good people. We opened the first international office, the Japan Representative Office in Tokyo. I signed the sister state province relationship with the Fujian province of the state of Oregon. I helped create the sister state province relationship with the province of Taiwan, and that was a little bit difficult. What you do with mainland China. Taiwan wanted one with ROC, and I said, I can't do that. That is the Republic of China rather than the People's Republic of China. Anyway, I finally managed it because of my good and close relationship with the leadership there, and we finally did create that. There was so much said about called workfare. I think it was Massachusetts got great credit, Governor Dukakis, about that. Oregon did a much better job at far less cost than any other state, including Massachusetts, who got all the credit. But we actually set up a program through our Human Resource Department, and that would be the Employment Division. And it comes back to what I said earlier, that we have to help people get off of welfare or not get on to start with. And so the way we worked it was that if somebody hit an emergency point, they wouldn't automatically go on welfare. We'd give emergency help, and we would try to get them jobs. And we were very successful. In spite of the high unemployment in the state of Oregon and the recession, we did a wonderful job. And I'm very proud of that. I created the State Employee Suggestions Awards Program. This one was a matter of, it was more of an attitude of state government is what I was trying to achieve. We would give someone 10% of what they saved, up to a maximum of $5,000. And we did give several $5,000 checks. But what I was trying to do was change the mental attitude of state employees. Well, I said to myself, you guys know better than I do about what needs to be done. Let us know. And they did. Two things I want to say about that. One, I went to a group in Human Resource, and they had been received awards from me, and so I was kind of going around the table there and saying, well, now what did you suggest? What do you suggest? And some man, what did you suggest? He said, I suggested they abolish my job. Oh? And obviously a man like that did get another job, but they abolished that job because it made some sense. The second one was, one morning I picked up the Oregonian on the front page, the state of Oregon wastes, I think it was $3,200.
$3,200,
waste. And that's the front page. And how we wasted it, there was a training session with the OLCC. And the training meant that they wanted all of them to stay together so that everybody was staying at the Holiday Inn or the airport. Now the waste came about because there were some people that lived in Portland. They didn't have to go to the Holiday Inn. And that was the waste. I'll be right with you. Let me just finish this, and then we'll go. No, you stay right there.
Okay.
Yeah, let's finish that one.
And okay.
Then, you ready?
It's on.
Okay. So I saw the reporter, and I said, Les, today at my open house, I'm going to present a check to a person on an employee suggestion award that saved the state $45,000. That never appeared anywhere. that wasn't even the back pages of the Oregonian.
Right. How did he respond to that?
Well, he thought that was interesting, but it never showed up anywhere. Okay.
All right, we'll take a break here.
All right.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
All right. In my first inaugural address, you can say anything you want, and I decided that mine was going to be more of a philosophical address than it was a litany of this program, that program, this program, that program. And I'm certain for the first time in terms of any of the governor, I very strongly highlighted voluntarism in the state of Oregon. And it turned out to be very fortuitous because we did get to a point where, you know, tax dollars were all that around and we needed all the volunteers we could get. Obviously at the time I didn't think of that. I just thought that volunteerism was good for the soul, because being a volunteer myself. And so highlighted it, and I still think it's a wonderful thing for people to do. And every once in a while I see where somebody brings it up as if it was a brand new thing, but I don't know if any governor ever included it in their major address. In this case, mine was very major to me, meaning my first inaugural. I love to tell the story. In the inaugural, I talk about this volunteerism, and I said, I can remember digging a ditch at a Boy Scout camp in the rain. And I said that, you know, they couldn't pay me to do this. They'd go out there and dig this ditch. I wouldn't do that for nothing, I mean, for pay. But up here I am, a volunteer, and I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. But the actual story was that I was digging an outhouse hole is what I was really digging. But those that helped me with the speech didn't figure it was very cool to talk about an outhouse hole in an inaugural address. So it turned out to be I was digging a ditch. Anyway, I told you earlier that I really liked people, and I had an open house every day that I was available in Salem from 12:30 to 1 o'clock. So fascinating. People would come and say, are you the governor? Yeah. Are you really the governor? Yeah. And, you know, there'd be people visiting from other states or from California. You can't believe that this is really this guy standing there as a governor, you know, just standing there. I think it drove my security a little nuts, but I enjoyed it. And I can recall it was wonderful when the kids would come, particularly the younger ones. When you get to junior high school and high school, you know, they just don't ask any questions, and they're, you know, they're very self-conscious. But the little kids, you know, they ask you all kinds of questions. Kid, I can remember, asked me one time how much the building weighed, this Capitol building weighed. I don't know. But they said, do you have a dog? Yes, I have a dog. How old are you? And I don't know whether it was, I was in my 60s then. 61, 2, ooh, they'd say. I say, well, when I was your age, that was the way I felt. But now that I'm here, it doesn't look that bad. But those are wonderful things. And then my media availability, I did that every week. And right back here, you see this calligraphy thing, Capital Press. And I don't know if the media ever gave a public official anything, but they thanked me for my availability, and I'm very proud of that. I think that's a wonderful thing. As a matter of fact, I would tell you honestly that it was sort of a highlight my week, meeting with the media. And this is fascinating. There would be times where I would deliberately say something that would just beg for a follow-up. And I would know that I did it. And so often they wouldn't follow up. And it really was kind of interesting. Now I maybe I'll defend them a little by saying that I understand they're all there, all the TV stations, all the radio stations, and the newspapers. So obviously they'll all get that piece of news, whatever that is. So maybe they'd like to get me aside, but even then sometimes they wouldn't even follow up on that basis.
Again, what you were saying earlier about how some people receive recognition for things that other people don't, I think that Tom McCall is often acknowledged as having this wonderful relationship with the press and being so available to the press.
Well, he was quotable. That's why they loved him.
Yeah.
I told Ron Schmidt, who was his press guy, why don't you make a deal with the governor? What's that? I said, why don't you have him write his speeches and you write his ad-libs? Because it was the ad-libs that got a lot of attention. But you know, Tom was quotable. It's the way he said things. And he was very good in the use of words. Excellent, as a matter of fact. And they liked him for that reason. But I'm pleased. I mean, the media availability to me was important. Again, it was important in the sense that Oregonians ought to know as best they can, as much attention they pay to it, you know, what's going on. And that was my way of saying that I recognize that relationship. Another thing that no one would ever see, but it's how you run government and how you make it work. I decided I was going to meet with some would say the cabinet. We don't have a cabinet style. Well, my agency heads once a week. Two reasons. One is that I didn't want to be surprised by anything. I wanted to know what's going on. And this was an easy way of finding out. But even more important was I wanted other agency heads to be able to know and talk with their counterparts, their peers. And the government wasn't that way. Somebody in human resources, somebody over at commerce, and somebody at energy, and somebody at they just don't talk to each other. By meeting, they got to know each other, they got to realize that what they were doing oftentimes affected some other agency. And so now we had a communication between agencies and a respect for one another that never existed before. So here you had a governor that was kept up to date with what was going on, and at the same time, agency began to talk to each other. It was a wonderful thing. That's not something, obviously, that it's not like the Willamette Greenway or saving the saving land, but I would tell you this, that I think most Oregonians are environmentalists. They love what Oregon has. They don't want to see it damaged. And I'm part of that. But my emphasis in 8 years of government was something that had been ignored, or at least not overtly worked for, and that was the human resource. And part of that was, now I want to put a bookend on this, because I talked about the food share in Columbia River and Planning Council and things like that. And this is the other bookend. And that is the diversification of the economy of the state of Oregon. And that came about actually because, being in the rug business, I could easily see how fragile our economy was. And I think somewhere in our types, I probably used the expression that when the federal government wanted to cool down the economy, they would raise interest rates and people would stop buying houses and they'd stop buying lumber. And so when they wanted to cool down the economy, Oregon always would get pneumonia. Come on in.
Want me to interrupt?
No, come on in.
I'll tell you what, can I use your restroom key?
Well, you can do that too, yes. Ron, you need to meet.
Well, you know, just going back for a second here, you said you were talking about your managing style, and I know that Alan Hayakawa from the Oregonian had referred to your managing style when he said, quote, "Atiyah is generally credited with superior knowledge of the details of state government." Quote, "McCall and Hatfield were more aloof from the process," said Richard Munn, director of the Department of Revenue, "while Atiyah was much more involved in personally sitting down with agency heads and talking about issues in their budget," end quote, So that's
good to know.
Yeah. Somebody recognized that and
well, I'm glad that somebody would find it. Are we on?
Yes, we are.
Okay. You know, in that regard, and we're talking about now in this respect, diversification of the economy, there's two ways to come at it. There's some that would know the details and what I call the small screws, but they don't see the big picture. You want to turn it off a second?
Okay, so we were talking about the diversification of the economy.
Well, but my point here was that one could think in terms of the small screws, I'll call them, but devoid of seeing a larger picture of what you want to do. Or, and I'll be very immodest to tell you that I was able to do both and convert, because coming back now to the diversification of the economy, that was something I knew I wanted to get done. I pursued it from the very beginning. It was very important to the state of Oregon, and as we see today, it had been exceedingly important. And it was just something I kept going on. So it wasn't just a matter of ordered some of these, say that I knew, and I did know. I was 20 years in the legislature. I didn't have to go to school to find out about this stuff. I knew it. I created a lot of what was there, or at least saw it created. And I know the personnel, I knew the people, and anyway, it was said that no one had the length of both legislative and business career that I had, and it was a useful thing at the time.
And what kinds of things did you do towards diversification that you see the results of now?
Well, it was interesting because it wasn't just something like, you know, people would see the trade missions as being part of that effort. And it's true, obviously, you've got to get out there. When I first went out, and again, I don't know, Carl, what I've said before, but when I first went out there, they knew, for example, in Japan what a governor was, and they respected that as an important office. But they didn't know where Oregon was. So I'm out there saying, well, it's between Washington and California. Well, hell, a governor doesn't want to tell anybody that. As it soon turned out, of course, that we didn't have to do that anymore. But, for instance, land use planning itself, there was almost a moratorium on building in the state of Oregon while they were in the process of coming up with accepted zoning by the various cities and counties. We had to, the state had to confirm that was it. So in the process, it was almost a moratorium. It was very difficult. So I pushed very hard to get the LCDC to conclude that process, to finish it. I noticed that once, there was a large argument, a lot of controversy, a lot of bracingness, but once the plan was adopted, that all went away. I mean, now it's adopted. So I pushed hard to get that job done. That's part of diversifying the economy, because you go to a company and say, look, you come to Oregon, you can say, I like that piece of property, you know you can build on it, but not only that, you know what it's going to look like years from now, because here's the planning. So it was a marketing tool for me, but I had to get it done. This whole matter of going through the bureaucracy, I created an economic, trying to think what I call it. It was an economic council. What it was my state agencies. The Department of Revenue, LCDC, DEQ, Water Resources. It depended on what I really needed. but these were individuals that were part of my council when we had a prospect. We would help them get through our process. And some of it would be dependent on what company and what they had to do. Someone from an agency, that was their job to help them get through the process. You can't see those things, but that's part of diversification and a selling tool. At least I sold them on the basis of Oregon employees are loyal, they're productive, and incidentally, as companies found out, indeed that was the truth, which is, you know, they would say all governors would say nice things about their citizens, but they found out it was true. I was telling them it was true. And I'm a businessman. They respected that, and they thought that was something that was good. But I decided that, and incidentally, it was wonderful, because if you can imagine Oregon with wood products, which was when I became governor, wood products, agriculture, and half tourism. So we had 2.5 building blocks of our economy. Now imagine if we were today with just those, where wood products is, where the timber industry is. Oregon would be really in just the deepest kind of recession today if we hadn't added international trade and high technology. And we also boosted tourism to a full-time deal. I would take in the side route for a second. They kept talking about the tourism industry, and there was no such animal as a tourist industry. There was the Restaurant and Beverage Association, there were destination resorts, there were a whole lot of them.
There wasn't a tourism commission.
But they all had their own individual interest. So then I created a tourism council where I put all these folks together. And for the first time, we had a tourism industry. And so, you know, you have to understand what the problem is and how you deal with it. But even during the recession, I kept constantly on this matter of diversifying the economy. At one of our sessions where we're cutting budgets, I increased the Department of Economic Development budget. I made the request and the legislature passed it. And then a very strong stride forward was the repeal of the unitary tax. Now, they keep talking about Japan, but very quietly in the wings was England. England hated our unitary tax, but they kind of let Japan be the leaders in this thing. But we repealed the unitary tax. But now here comes in, if you talk to Richmond, for example. I've been on a tax committee for 20 years. And so when I decided I was going to repeal the unitary tax, and I'd say, okay, now you guys come back, the Department of Revenue, and you know, no idea is a bad idea. In the meantime, I'm thinking about what I want to get done. And they come back, and they didn't want to do it, incidentally. The Department of Revenue didn't want to do it. We had a multi-state tax commission, and the whole idea was to head off anybody that wants to get rid of unitary tax. That's what the whole idea was. Finally, I said, "No, okay, I want you to do it this way," after they told me the various ways it couldn't be done. That's the way they approached it. I said, "Okay, now I want you to do this." "Well, Governor, you can't do that." "No, this is the way we're going to do it." "But Governor, you can't. Go back and do it." And so they went back reluctantly and came back with it not quite there. "You go back and figure it out. This is what I want to do." I told them what I wanted to get done. And they finally did, and we called a special session, and we passed it. And it was striking news. It's the first state in the union to repeal the unitary tax. Morita of Sony, came here with his Kadanrin, that is the major business association in Japan. And so when he was here, he was talking about how bad the unitary tax was. And before he left, I told him what I had in mind to do. So when we passed it, I called him, because they were going to write a report, meaning his committee. And I want to make sure that in this written report, it was that Oregon repealed this. Called him to Japan, got him on a golf course, told him we repealed it, just to make sure that in the report it said that Oregon had repealed it. So that's the bookend. That was a significant thing. Now people, I listen to the economists today, and they say, well, Oregon is doing well because we have a diversified economy. as if it always existed. It didn't exist before 1979. It wasn't there. And so I'm very proud of that. And I want to take credit for it because it was one of the major things that was done. Now, back to the human resource. That meant that Oregonians could get a job, raise their families, you know, live a decent life, have a home. Right? You know, and to me, a human resource is very important. I really have a great depth of sense of feeling about the people. That's why it hurt so much when I knew so many Oregonians were really suffering during the recession. It's not only those that had lost their jobs, it was all those people out there that were afraid they were going to lose theirs. So we had to do something, we had to move things along.
What about dealing with the other side of that equation, which was the lessening or the diminishing timber economy? And because it was getting, well, actually during your time, it wasn't really declining that much, was it? The cut was actually increasing.
No, we had some real problems. We had to work for what we call timber relief. And what that meant was that we had these timber companies were outbidding on public timber. And during this period of time, they were bidding high to get the timber because the way the economy is going, they didn't have to harvest it for 5 years. So by the time they had to harvest it, now they're going to make a profit. Before that, if they had to harvest it on the day they bought it, they'd take a loss. The recession came along and zoom, I mean, stumpage went way down, Now they have this very expensive timber, on their bid, but they just don't have it in the world they can harvest.
So they were defaulting.
They had the danger of defaulting because, again, these are five-year contracts. Mm-hmm. So it gave us a chance to go back to Congress to get them to get what we call timber relief. That is an opportunity to rebid that timber and get that off of their back. There were some major timber companies that were, they were terribly affected. We did manage to get that is timber relief.
And some of the smaller timber companies, too.
Ones, but there were some big ones. Really big ones. Roseburg Lumber was really, if there hadn't passed the timber relief, I don't know what would have happened. And Bohemia, the same thing. But,